Well, welcome into what should be a very fun, a very entertaining, and a very different version of We've Seen That, movies from the 80s, 90s, and more. I'm TJ Reeves. He's the famous J.J. Betzel. We're back for another installment, but it's not just going to be us on this show. We're going to have a lot of fun here, and a lot of fun with friends, with people that do what we do, and that's review and talk about movies, J. Betzel.
I'm really looking forward to it because, you know, let's be honest, we are two guys that watch movies and enjoy movies. But on this particular episode, we have people that are actual movie critics and film guys that do this for a living. So I'm really looking forward to mixing and mingling with them.
A big roundtable discussion is upcoming. You know it's something special. It's something special because we have yet another 25th anniversary. And without giving it away, Jay keeps preaching to me, stop tipping everything, stop giving it away. Here's the movie we're discussing on We've Seen That. Listen up.
And how long have you been out of law school?
A little over a year.
Have you ever been in a courtroom?
Commander, Lieutenant Caffey has successfully plea bargained 44 cases in 9 months.
One more, I get a set of steak knives.
The facts of the case are these. On midnight of September 6th, the accused entered the barracks room of their platoon mate. They tied his arms and legs with tape and forced a rag into his throat. He drowned in his own blood and was pronounced dead at 37 minutes past midnight.
I don't think you're fit to handle the defense.
You don't even know me. Ordinarily, it takes someone hours to discover I'm not fit to handle a defense.
You want to investigate me? Roll the dice and take your chances. I eat breakfast 300 yards from 4,000 Cubans who were trained to kill me. So don't think for 1 second you can come down here, flash a badge, and make me nervous.
I'll knock it all down to involuntary manslaughter, 2 years, or home in 6 months.
No deal. We're going to court.
No, you're not.
Why not?
Because you'll lose.
Do you think Santiago was murdered?
Private Santiago is dead because he had no honor. And God was watching.
How do you feel about that theory?
Sounds good to me.
If this case is handled in the same fast food, slick ass, Persian bazaar manner with which you seem to handle everything else, then something's gonna get missed.
You wanna slam dunk this guy?
Danny,
I know what you're gonna say. You don't have to. But we don't have to make a whole big deal out of it. You like me, I won't make you say it.
I was just gonna tell you to wear matching socks tomorrow.
Okay. Good tip.
All right!
In the heart of the nation's capital, in a courthouse of the U.S. government.
We follow orders or people die. It's that simple. Are we clear?
Yes, sir.
Are we clear?
Crystal.
One man will stop at nothing to keep his honor, and one will stop at nothing to find the truth.
You men follow orders or people die.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You?
There you have it, A Few Good Men. It was released on December 11th, 1992, 25 years ago as we are recording this, which is crazy to think about. When it opened, it was number one at the box office. It opened at $15 million, and overall, domestically, it made $141 million. Overseas, it made $101 million for a grand total $243 million. And let's kind of just take a quick look at what the cast, kind of how they got paid for this. Looking at an LA Times article, it's talking about the $41 million budget, and most of it went to the cast because it was all shot on a soundstage in Culver City. There wasn't like special effects or anything to this. And here we've got Tom Cruise was paid $12.5 million. Jack Nicholson made $5 million, but it also translated to $500,000 a day for 10 days worth of work. It's not too bad work if you can get it.
Yes.
He also earned it. Demi Moore was paid less than $2 million. But her fee was negotiable because she was fighting for the role against Jodie Foster, who was coming off Silence of the Lambs, and Linda Hamilton, who was coming off Terminator 2. So she really wanted it. So she basically said, here, I don't care how much I get paid. I want to be in this movie. And then also Kiefer Sutherland, who played Kendrick, he got $1 million. Kevin Bacon got $750,000. Director Rob Reiner, coming off of Misery and Stand By Me and kind of the nice little run he was in, he made $4 million. So there's kind of some of your numbers on A Few Good Men.
Yes. So again, Cruz, the mega star in this one. Surprising that Nicholson wasn't comparable there, but as you mentioned, kind of ratio to the work. So this is a movie that for you, for me, for a lot of people, we've seen it so many times, not just the name of our show, but we've seen it so many times now on reruns, especially on weekends and at nights. I mean, it is a classic, and it has really continued on. It set the standard in terms of dramatic, theatrical acting, heavy on the script, heavy on the acting, fast moving on the script and the dialogue. And I think it just clicked with people. And I'm looking forward to the roundtable that we're about to have. And I want to tell you a little bit about this roundtable and how it came about. As Jay mentioned, the different individuals that we're going to have join us on this show are all hosts of their own show, their own podcast, or operate their own website about movies or in some combination there. Joanna Langfield and John Cross are both in New York. Mike White is actually joining us from another continent, from Asia. He will be in on the roundtable, and of course, Jay Betza will be giving his opinions as well. So for our audience here on We've Seen That, you're going to hear some different voices, and Jay, you're going to hear me bringing up who those voices are. They're going to be giving their opinions, but I like the fact that you're weighing in as well on behalf of us here on We've Seen That.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to hear what they have to say, because you and I, had we done this by ourselves, it would have just been a love fest, because you and I have been friends for a long time, and there's a few movies that when they're on TV, we always talk about, and one of us will text the other one, hey, turn on TNT, and like, I'm already there. And so we already know that how much we love A Few Good Men, so I'm interested to see how these other people feel and if they share our passion for this movie.
Yeah, different points of view. So, again, we're excited. You're locked in with us. And a reminder, you can find us on Twitter and on Facebook at We've Seen That. Our show is not only on Blog Talk Radio, but also on iTunes and Stitcher. And, again, thanks to all of our colleagues and those of the higher-ups with Blog Talk Radio, because they arranged for these different guests to be with us. Are you ready for the roundtable discussion? Because that's what we have upcoming. You ready to go?
I'm really excited, and I really think that our listeners are going to enjoy this.
Okay, for the audience, the roundtable discussion is upcoming, and then Jay and I will be back here on We've Seen That to give some final thoughts after that roundtable discussion. So just recently, upon the 25th anniversary of A Few Good Men, we brought in some different hosts, some different critics. Here now is that entire discussion about this great movie. Well, welcome into what is a special broadcast for all of us that are on this current call, that are all hosts and or critics and or movie buffs. This is a special edition of all of our shows because we're talking about the 25th anniversary of what we all believe is a classic movie, A Few Good Men, starring Tom Cruise, Jack Nicholson, and Demi Moore. My name is TJ Reeves, and I host, along with Jay Betzel, a movie podcast show called We've Seen That. Say hello, Jay Betzel, if you would.
Hello, everybody.
Good to have you here with us. Let's introduce our other guests that are with us. Joanna Langfield hosts her own program. I'll let you introduce the name of your program and your podcast and your website. Go ahead, Joanna.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me. I am Joanna Langfield, and my podcast and my website and everything, I try to keep it simple. It's called themovieminute.com. How's that? Hope you'll come and listen.
Check her out at themovieminute.com. Okay, also with us in the New York area where Joanna is John Cross. Welcome, John, and tell us about your show and your site.
Well, my show and my website is the After Movie Diner and aftermoviediner.com. I just love movies. And today I went to get a photograph taken for my new permanent resident card because I've been in the United States 10 years, but
clap
I couldn't.
For John. Let's clap for John. He's about to be official in the United States. We like that, John.
But I couldn't handle the booth.
Well, hopefully it'll work out for you someday. Now, we are definitely international. We are definitely crossing the international dateline because Mike White is with us, and Mike is not in the continental United States like we are. Mike, introduce yourself and tell us where you're from and what you're doing.
Hey, everybody. My name is Mike White. I'm the host of the Projection Booth podcast over projection-booth.com. And, yeah, I'm over here in China for right now. I'll be back in the good old United States in about a week or so. But, so I can tell you a little bit about tomorrow. Tomorrow sucks. So go back to bed, America.
So one time we're talking, we've woken Mike up early, and we've had all kinds of technical fun to get all of us together, all five of us together, even though we're all in different locations. Again, we've got Florida, Texas, New York, and Shanghai all represented to talk about A Few Good Men. So, look, I think there's a couple of givens. We all enjoy movies. This movie is a classic. It's the 25th anniversary. So let's begin with this. Ladies first. Joanna, I would love your opinion first. Why do you think A Few Good Men has held up as a dramatic classic 25 years later?
You know, I sort of freaked out when you got in touch with me and you said 25 years, because I will be honest and I'll tell you that I have been reviewing movies professionally long enough that I reviewed this movie when it first came out. And so I've been around a little bit. And so 25 years, to think that it was that long is a little scary, but I think it's deserved, because the movie, you know, it's so interesting now when you think of the timing on this thing, the fact that we're celebrating this as Aaron Sorkin's first film. And Aaron Sorkin, of course, has a new movie coming out, Molly's Game, and that's opening Christmas in the United States. So this was a great splash for him, but it really started when the piece, as a theater piece, opened on Broadway. And it was highly acclaimed. And then, of course, you know, as they used to do back when they did a lot of just straight dramas on Broadway, they took the thing and they made a movie out of it. What is so compelling, I mean, there are so many things that are so compelling about this, but the look at what goes on in the military, we're talking again about very interesting subjects that got a lot of attention then and obviously haven't been solved, because we're talking about abuse and we're talking about men and women and we're talking about masculinity. We're talking about a lot of stuff in A Few Good Men. And it went places that a lot of other, you know, theater pieces, movies had not previously. And also, it's so well acted. When you look at those scenes with Tom Cruise and with Jack Nicholson, I mean, that's just thrilling to watch. So it should be a classic, even if it is 25 years.
Love it. We'll get to that scene in a few moments. All right. I'll go next to John Cross. John, why do you think the movie has held up the way that it has as a popular movie for 25 years?
Well, it's got that thing that all sorts of American movies that are considered classics kind of have. It's got the all-American thing. It's the military is the subject of it. You've got baseball in there. You've got Tom Cruise in there. You've got the wisecracking sidekick. You've got daddy issues. You've got masculinity and bravado and braggadocio and all that kind of stuff. And it's all sort of timeless, because everyone is mostly in uniform for most of the film, or at least in kind of generic casual clothes. The film doesn't date in that regard. It is about themes that continue to run and have always been part of human nature, whether it is specifically in the military or whether it's at school with people being bullied or whatever, or peer pressure or whatever it is. There's sort of the timeless themes, and you know, this is also coming on, it's sort of at the end, though, but it's coming on the back of Rob Reiner's sort of real winning streak in terms of the films he was making. And a lot of his films have that quality, that quality of old Hollywood. And even though they're made in the 80s and the 90s, they have that quality of being timeless. It's no putting on A Few Good Men or putting on When Harry Met Sally or putting on Stand By Me or any of those films. You know, you could as equally be watching a movie made today as you could be watching a movie that was made in 1950. The American nature of it. And there is something about that is familiar and warm and fun to go back to. And A Few Good Men is definitely one of those movies that if it's on the TV, you sit and watch it. There's no way to not continue watching it, even if you've seen it 100 times, as most of us have. So that's why I think.
Agree with that. I'll bring Mike White in for his thoughts. Why, in your opinion, has the movie held up the way that it has?
Well, I think this is one of the best courtroom drama, especially when it comes to one of the best adaptations of a screenplay from a stage play. This one doesn't feel like it's bound to the stage. There are certain movies where it feels like you're expecting a curtain to drop at a certain point to announce that the first act is over. But if you could mend, I think it does a really good job of breaking away from the stage. Obviously, the courtroom scenes feel a little bit stagey, but that's just because of the courtroom. But there's a lot of times where I forget that this was a stage play, as opposed to something like, you know, 6 Degrees. Audience, where this one has a lot of subtle acting, a lot of Rob Reiner knows how to use the camera. And to John's point, this was to me the end of a, you know, amazing tour of Rob Reiner, starting from, you know, This Is Spinal Tap all the way up to A Few Good Men. He stumbled after this with North. Well, stumbled. He crashed and burned after this with North, and I don't think he ever recovered from that. But A Few Good Men was kind of the pinnacle of Rob Reiner as an amazing American director.
Well, I can verify that Jay Betzel and I, who have been friends now for several years, will constantly call each other whenever this movie is on and start reciting lines, and I hear you guys laughing about that. So I already sort of know this answer, but Jay, the floor is yours. Why do you believe that as we're taping this on the 25th anniversary of A Few Good Men, it's held up for as long as it has as a classic drama, courtroom military drama?
There's so many reasons. I mean, first off, as a classic, which I believe was the question at the beginning, was it's got just some straight-up movie stars, Jack Nicholson, Tom Cruise, Demi Moore, Kevin Bacon, Kiefer Sutherland. It's like everywhere you look, it's big movie stars, and the acting is amazing. The writing, Aaron Sorkin is amazing. Like this basically introduced us to Aaron Sorkin, and we ended up with Malice, The American President, The West Wing, Social Network, The Newsroom, all these great things, you know, and this was kind of the beginning of all that. Plus, you know, as a fan of Tom Cruise, the movie star, earlier in 92, he had Far and Away, which was kind of a bomb. So this kind of brought Tom Cruise back to the leading man movie star, which kind of led into The Firm and the others that kind of came after this. And plus, you kind of mentioned, I believe it was John that said every time it's on TV, you kind of watch it. Whenever I see it, it could be on TNT or AMC. It's one of those. It doesn't even really matter if it's on one of the commercial channels where it's edited. It's just such a great movie. You can just watch it all the way through and kind of just flip the remote over your shoulder and you're locked in for the next 2 hours.
Love it. All right, let's go on with another topic here for all of our hosts who are also movie buffs and critics alike. John, I'll go to you first. I'm curious from everyone, but you get the first honors here. What would you say is your favorite aspect or part of this movie? I'm curious. Go.
Oh, my favorite aspect and part of this movie. I think my favorite aspect of this movie is the ensemble. That's what I'm really getting from it. I mean, the script is incredible, and of course they need that to really all work together. But for me, it's the cast, the acting, and the ensemble. You can probably hear my dog going crazy in the background there.
Your dog agrees with you. Yeah. It's the ensemble.
I'm sorry about that. She has a bad jaw. She can't handle the tooth. But anyway, she was saying that. Sorry. but no, it's definitely the ensemble. Like, everyone is pulling out their A game here. The funny thing is that the one of the things about the movie that, to me, and this might be my cold, hard, cynical, English, repressed attitude, but that the earnestness of Tom Cruise in this film it kind of rankles with me. That's why I think it's really, really good that you have Pollock there as his sidekick, kind of giving the little one-liners and things, because that kind of takes the edge off Tom Cruise kind of trying to be Mr. Wonderful, you know, in absolutely everything. But to me, it's definitely the ensemble. It's the performances. It's the cast. The cast is incredible. Yeah, and I think it's those people saying those words, and always charming to watch, I think.
Joanna, I'll go to you next. What's your favorite aspect or part of the movie?
Well, I don't, you know, everybody loves that big scene. And in terms of favorite, I'd rather talk, if it's okay, about two things that I think are really important about this movie. One of them, I'll go with you from the Tom Cruise performance, okay? I am going to go right here, and I'm going to make a really controversial statement. Everybody's going to get hysterical. I think Tom Cruise is a very good actor. I think he is underappreciated as an actor, because there have been several times when he has co-starred with big stars like Jack Nicholson, like Dustin Hoffman, like, you know, I mean, there are a whole bunch of them, that he was literally in almost every scene with the other star, Paul Newman. Okay? When you're doing a duo kind of performance like that, those other stars always got the recognition. Tom didn't, because he was the straight man. But those guys couldn't have done what they did if they weren't bouncing off of him. And I think it really, I remember, maybe it was Paul Newman, who actually recognized Tom and said that about the way they had worked together. And they, I know, became very close personally, but you can see on screen when there is a dual situation going on, just the two actors, you know, bouncing off of each other like that. I look again, and if you have a little, I mean, I know everybody has a whole Tom Cruise thing, but watch what he's doing, and I think you might be surprised. Now, one of my favorite
Branner, I don't want to jump in. I just want to quickly say, I completely agree with you. I think Tom Cruise is actually a really good actor, and I've actually enjoyed him the more that he has lost that kind of like all-American earnestness and become a bit more snarky and crazy and weird and wonderful on screen. So right. I actually agree with you. I think he gives really great performances, and I think his performance in this is really great. I just, in my own sensibility, is one to kind of scoff at overwrought earnestness. That's all I was saying.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right, Joanna, what was the other thing that was your favorite, real quick, quickly?
Okay. Especially now, it's really great to look and see that Demi Moore is in there. She's working with all these men, and they wrote and they acted a group of men working with a woman, and everything's fine. Nobody's falling in love. No one is doing sexual abuse. No one is doing, you know, they have a good working relationship. And isn't that nice to see? And the fact that this was done 25 years ago, and it's taken us 25 years to get to where we are now, is a whole other conversation, I realize. But I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yep, and it's even in a military setting. All right, I'll quickly go to Mike White. Favorite aspect or part of A Few Good Men?
Well, I got to say the dialogue. I mean, when I was working at a movie theater, this was a trailer that I saw over and over and over again. And so the whole Private Santiago is dead, and that is a tragedy speech. That is something that we would say to each other at work all the time in toto. And just, I mean, of course, the whole you can't handle the truth scene is fantastic, but there are other moments to this that are equally as good. I mean, Kiefer Sutherland, to John's point, the whole idea of the ensemble, Kiefer Sutherland is barely in this movie, but he makes such a huge impact. J.T. Walsh, I mean, Christopher Guest, for God's sakes, just all these little roles add so much to the greater piece. And again, it just speaks to how well they all come together and how well they do it. And in, you know, some of our main characters, like I always want to call him James Hurley, but James Marshall, right? He does such a great job when it comes to just the little emotions on his face and just his confusion. And again, those dialogue pieces are just riveting. Just it crackles with electricity.
Love it. Jay Betzel, I give you one last crack at what is your favorite aspect or part of A Few Good Men?
Well, my favorite part is the whole thing, because I think this movie's perfect. But just for the purpose of this question, I really liked the rapport amongst the lawyers at the beginning when they assigned the case to Tom Cruise. I thought that was a lot of fun. And I liked the part, I know the you can't handle the truth, the climactic scene gets a lot of pub, but the part when he asked Jack Nicholson for the transfer order, I think that's really intense. And then also, spoiler alert, the ending whenever they actually get convicted of the conduct unbecoming, because I think that's realistic. If they'd have gotten off on everything, it would have been a ho-hum Hollywood ending. So sure. That's a few little things I love.
Well, and I'll just interject one here to kind of agree with whichever one of our guests was saying it earlier, that the dialogue in this movie makes the movie. I mean, there are no special effects. There's no $200 million budget on blowing things up and aliens and that kind of thing. It is the dialogue and the acting that makes the movie, that part of the aspect. All right, we'll move on to another subject here with all of our hosts and all of our critics. I'll begin this time with John Cross. Actually, with John last time. I'll begin with Mike White here. Hey, Mike, you made mention of Kiefer Sutherland and his performance. Is that the actor who stands out the most as a supporting actor in this movie 25 years later? Would it be Kiefer Sutherland for you, real quick?
You know, for me, I love J.T. Walsh, and I just, his role in this is just one of my favorite bits. And the guy, I mean, we lost him, you know, quite years ago, and that was a tragedy because he was always so good in everything that he was in. And his, spoiler alert, his suicide in this movie was so intense that for years later, after he even died of a heart attack, but I kept thinking, oh yeah, he killed himself, because I would just always picture him committing suicide in this movie. I'm sorry to laugh, but it's just like, oh my God, it really just brought me to my knees watching that scene. And yeah, he was always so good. And here he is trying to do the right thing. Just his role in this, I thought was wonderful. And like I said, I could never take my eyes off of the guy, even when he's kind of in the background, even when he's there with Jack Nicholson, who is just chewing on the scenery like crazy. But J.T. Walsh, he's got the presence to just command a scene.
I love it. And again, I reveal this to our audience on We've Seen That, the show that Jay and I host all the time. I'll say it again to you guys and your audience. I'm a husband. I'm a father of twin girls. The dog in our house is even a female, so I always defer to the female. So I'm always going to come back to Joanna Langfield in a hurry. So, Joanna, you're up next. Who out of the supporting cast stands out to you even to this day? Go.
Well, thank you for that. But you know what? I have to agree. J.T. Walsh is one of those actors that every time you see him in every kind of a movie, every kind of a different performance, he nailed it. And I was lucky enough to get to meet him a couple of times and talk to him. And he was just the best. He was
please
so
tell me,
fun.
Please tell me you asked him about playing Lieutenant Colonel Markinson. Did you get a chance?
We talked about a lot of stuff, but more, I'll tell you what we really talked about, which I remember more than anything. We talked about some of the people he worked with. And he was the kind of, he wasn't an actor who went off and learned his lines and was separate and hoity-toity and he couldn't. He was in there talking with everybody and having a great time. As a matter of fact, he almost came out to dinner with me and my husband because that's the kind of guy he was. And I said to him, you know, he said, oh, I'm kind of hanging out here in New York. And I didn't, you know, and I said, well, just come to dinner with us. I feel so bad that you're by yourself. He said, honey, this is my town. I'm in New York, baby. He was just adorable. And you knew when he walked out of that hotel, he was good. I was only in a hotel with him for professional reasons, by the way.
Right.
Yeah, it was a junket. So, you know, you knew that he could walk into a bar and the whole place would just surround him and love him and know him, and he would know them, and everybody would be great friends by the end of it, the same way he was on every single movie set. And, you know, that's really, I've been lucky. I've met a lot of people over the years, and he's one of the few people that I think I can say that about.
Love it. John Cross, supporting actor that stands out to you.
I'm as big a fan of J.T. Walsh as there can be, big fan of him. But as people have spoken so eloquently about him already, I'm going to go Kevin Pollak. It's early in his filmography. I think the only other kind of really big film that he had done before this was Willow. But he is great in this movie and makes a mark on this movie, as I say, with his deadpan witticisms and his little side jokes and things like that. And he sort of takes the edge off what could be an incredibly sort of oppressive, serious kind of film. And, you know, we know that obviously at the beginning of the film, Cruise's character is very kind of casual and laid back and funny. But obviously during the film, he's got to, you know, he's got to become more and more engulfed by the, you know, serious and disgusting nature of the crime that he's trying. So having Kevin Pollak there, it helps if you're a fan of comedy like I am, then it just helps to have that that sidekick there just doing his stuff. And, you know, obviously he then went on to do, you know, The Usual Suspects and other films where, you know, he really shines. And actually, as much as I like his stand-up and his podcast and other stuff that he does now, it's a shame that he's not doing more character actor roles. He could really have done some really great character moments if he'd continued doing that. And unfortunately, he just always kind of gets cast, I guess, as Kevin Pollak now. But I mean, it's still a great performance, and I still think a nice little addition to that trio at the center of this film.
Okay, Jay and I talk about this movie all the time, but I actually don't know this answer. Jay Betzel, what is, give me the actor that you think out of the supporting cast stands out to you 25 years later, real quick.
Like the rest of our friends here, I will always extol the greatness of J.T. Walsh. He was great in Blue Chips and Tequila Sunrise and all these other movies that are full of big movie stars. But I will say, I have to agree with John and go Kevin Pollak, really, because this movie would be so intense without his little lines about having no responsibility whatsoever. And all the you are talking about is his baby pointing at a mailbox. You know, the stuff that he did kept this movie kind of flowing, you know, in that way where he's a stand-up comedian, obviously, but I mean, he's such a good actor. And I think this kind of showed off a little bit of both. And also, I'd be remiss if I didn't at least mention Kevin Bacon, because this movie was so important to Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon. This one in JFK, I believe,
kind of tied to everything.
So I'd go with those two.
Smiling
Jack
Ross.
Yeah, this was a linchpin. Yeah, between this and JFK, you were golden when it came to the Kevin Bacon game.
Absolutely. Sleepers, I think, was kind of our third wheel. But, yes, this was huge for that.
All right. I will interject two things about Kevin Pollak. I saw this movie as I was dating my soon-to-be wife a few years later, and she's tapping me going, that guy was at Gator Growl. That guy's at Gator Growl. And I didn't know what she was talking about. What she means is that the University of Florida, for their homecoming football weekend, has a guest come in, either a musician or a comedian, and come into the football stadium in front of tens of thousands of people and entertain the night before the homecoming football game. She had recently seen Kevin Pollak as the comedian at Gator Growl. And so to John's point, he hadn't been in much in terms of films. He was known more as a comedian when he made this movie. And the other thing is, I got a chance to meet Kevin Pollak. This has been at least a decade ago, and I did have to get off a quick question about A Few Good Men. I said, what was it like to be on that set every day? And he looked at me and kind of deadpanned, other than being scared to death every day. And I said, understandable with the cast that he was with. So I like what all of you say about Kevin Pollak. I still got to go Kiefer Sutherland, because I'm such a big fan after this of all the work he's done, including 24, and now the new series where he's playing the president himself as designated survivor. He's great as Lieutenant Kendrick here in A Few Good Men. So I give it up to him 25 years later. We've got a few more moments here to move along with our panel. I want to start with Mike White, who, again, is graciously with us in the morning in China at the time that we're talking here. We didn't mention Demi Moore. Actually, Joanna's the only one that's really brought up her character in that situation. Mike, give me your opinion of her performance and the character Joe Galloway, what you thought. Quickly, go.
Well, gosh, Demi Moore, I used to love watching her performances. And the other reason I say used to is because I can't think of the last thing that she was in other than maybe Charlie's Angels 2. But she was fantastic. And I think I'm the only person on this panel who doesn't necessarily like Kevin Pollak as much, because there are a couple, there's like one sour note for me when he is talking about why he doesn't like the guys that they're defending, and it just seems a little too heavy-handed. But then he kind of counters it with this whole idea of the back and forth between he and Joanne, where he's talking about, you know, no, I strenuously object. That is probably one of my favorite moments with him.
Is that how it works? I strenuously object. Is that how it works?
But she holds her own in this. And I love that back and forth between the three of those characters. And also, just kind of going back all the way to the beginning of the discussion, when it comes to Tom Cruise, I totally agree. I used to be a huge Tom Cruise fan. And I think despite myself, I still am a huge Tom Cruise fan. I watched The Mummy. I didn't like The Mummy, but I watched The Mummy. And he is amazing. And he has so many great moments in this. And I know that I'm not talking about Demi Moore right now, but he has so many great moments. The way that he purses his lips after he does that whole, you know, are we clear moment, you know, just the little facial tics that he has in this are fantastic. But yes, I going back to Demi Moore, I really do enjoy her character, and I am very appreciative to the earlier point about that there isn't the heavy-handed romance part of this, that they are co-workers, and that this kind of does go back to like more of an old Hollywood style where you can have two people working together and they don't have to sleep together. I really am glad about that, that she is a strong female character and that she holds her own in this. I'd like to see the Joanne Galloway sequel where she goes out and does her own thing. Maybe make that a TV show.
It could be. It could be the follow-up to this movie. Joanna Langfield, what about you touched on it a little bit about Demi Moore and her role. Give me another 60 seconds on it here. Go.
Well, you know, I think the role is wonderful. And again, as I said in the beginning, I will go to my grave being appreciative of the fact that they were working together and they became friends eventually. And there was respect. And that's what you needed. It was interesting when I first saw the movie, I wasn't crazy necessarily about her performance. It grew on me. And, you know, that's one thing I will say, you know, when you're doing this for a living and you're running into these screenings and then you're supposed to regurgitate out a review in 5 minutes and, you know, you kind of, sometimes it's better to see things a few times or to live with them a little bit before you make some big pronouncement. But of course, we don't have time for that. I found that her performance was a little like, looking a little nervous. What's going on? As I watched it over and over, I grew to respect that she allowed Joanne, her character, to be a little nervous among these guys and then to kind of find her way. And it's a much more subtle way of doing things. And, you know, Aaron Sorkin and subtlety are not exactly hand in hand usually, but I grew to really respect what she did. And again, like you said, I really wish that we would see more of her. I hope she's okay, and I hope that she will be able to get some work.
All right, John Cross, opinion on Demi Moore quickly?
Well, just echo what everyone said. I mean, I was always a fan of Demi Moore. I was a big Brat Pack fan growing up, so I always liked St. Elmo's Fire and About Last Night and One Crazy Summer, and she does some great roles there. But, I mean, once she's getting into films like A Few Good Men and then follows it up with Indecent Proposal and Disclosure and various other films going forward, she has that ability of projecting strength through the screen, which all the best actors do. And it's so relevant and vital in this film. You know, at the beginning of the film, like I said, Tom Cruise's character is very, you know, he's lazy and casual and thinks he's just like the hippest guy and, you know, is doing his own kind of thing. And then, as we said, like Kevin Pollak's got that kind of sardonic wit. She's the one that's really the driving force behind sorting this out and getting this to trial and all the other stuff at the beginning of the film. And it's so she's so important. She's such a linchpin to that trio. So and she does the role effortlessly. I think the thing with people like Demi Moore and Tom Cruise is, especially back in the 90s, they get so associated with being Demi Moore or Tom Cruise in the eyes of people through the celebrity rags or whatever it is, that people forget that when you watch them on screen, it seems effortless what they're doing in terms of their performances. They're so strong and they're so watchable and they're so good in their roles that you kind of go, oh yeah, but they're Demi Moore and Tom Cruise, but they're not. They're like Demi Moore and Tom Cruise. There's a reason why they are the stars that they were, or they were the stars that they were at the time. So I'm a big fan of her performance.
Jay Butzel, I'll let you have the last word on Demi Moore as Joan Galloway.
Well, you know, when she made this, she had made Ghost in 90, and then she had like three complete bombs in 91. So I read, actually cheated and did a little research for this. I read that she was going up against Jodie Foster to get this role and that she got it. So that tells you a little bit right there, because Jodie Foster was coming off Silence of the Lambs. So from that end, you know, hooray to her. But I do think that she did a good job in the, I believe Joanna was mentioning how she looked nervous, because I think that added kind of a human quality, because when she strenuously objected, she was really trying to help, even though she really messed everything up, you know. And when she spoke to Aunt Jenny and kind of conned her way into the deal, you know, it was kind of like an innocent thing because she'd wanted to be on there, and she kind of just made her way in because of Tom Cruise letting her call Aunt Jenny. And I think she did a good job in the movie, and I think her character was pretty vital because she is the one the whole time that believed, because Tom Cruise wanted to plea it out. Kevin Pollak didn't want any part of these guys. He thought they should go to jail forever, and she was kind of the force that kept it going.
All right, well said on that. So we have a couple more subjects that we're going to cover here on the 25th anniversary of A Few Good Men with all of our guests that are hosts and critics of these movies. I'll begin with John Cross on this one. We kind of broached the subject of the climactic scene that everybody's seen over and over again. If you know nothing else about the movie, you know that you can't handle the truth and the climactic scene where Danny Caffey gets Lieutenant Colonel Nathan Jessup to confess on the stand. In your opinion, who got the better of that scene between the two actors? We know what the outcome is, how the scene is written, but who got the better of whom acting in that scene? What would you say, John?
Well, I love the scene. It's like the culmination of the mystery. You know, courtroom dramas in their way are like detective films, and normally, you know, I can't handle the sleuth, but in this one, it's just fantastic. Jack Nicholson gets the moment. And again, this sort of comes back to what I was saying about Tom Cruise's earnestness. He's fantastic, and he's definitely displaying the earnestness in the way that he should do, in the way that it's written, and he's certainly putting his all out there. But there's something about Nicholson. There's just always going to be something about Nicholson. He is just so magnetic. You, in this film, you absolutely love to hate him. He's an absolute bastard, and everything about him is repellent, but he is just so convinced of his own BS that it's just sort of fantastic. And it's wonderful as well to kind of see his fall after that event as well, you know? Like, after that event, you see his demise, and it's richly deserved, of course it is, but it all pins on him in that scene, and I do think he gets the better. Tom Cruise does a lot of like hand thumping and hand waving and red facedness and Jack just sits there in the chair and says the line, and you know the everyone stands and applauds, you know.
Mike White, I'll go to you next. An opinion on who gets the upper hand acting-wise or memorably between Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson in the scene?
Well, again, I have to go back to the writing. I mean, when Jack Nicholson goes into the whole "we live in a world with walls," that is one of the best bits of dialogue. So even though they are sparring, he wins when it comes to what he has to say. And even more than the way that he says it. But this is Jack Nicholson. And this is Jack Nicholson giving, at this point, a rare, great Jack Nicholson performance. He's not just being Jack Nicholson. So he's kind of fallen into that same trap as Al Pacino, where Al Pacino is now just Al Pacino. But Nicholson occasionally can break out and be something other than Jack Nicholson. And he, you know, you mentioned the name, Nathan R. Jessup. We know that name. And we know that he is, to John's point, such a bastard. And I love that it's his hubris that is his undoing, and that it is finally when Tom Cruise, when Daniel Caffey figures out that he is so full of pride that that will be the sword that he falls on.
Lead him right where he wants to go, right, Mike?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. It is wonderful. I think the sparring between those two characters is fantastic. But, yeah, I have to say Nicholson just has the rippling dialogue that I talked about before.
Joanna, quickly, who got the better of whom, Cruise or in the end there, Nicholson?
Well, you know how I feel about everybody having their shot there, but they couldn't have done it without each other, but I think Nicholson wins. What I will say is there's a lot of talk right now. There's a movie that's just starting to hit theaters called Call Me By Your Name, actually won Best Picture from one of the critics groups. And there's a scene at the end that is so amazing because Michael Stuhlbarg has an incredible little passage. He has a speech, very different from this, totally different, opposite, 180 degrees. But he just sits there. He doesn't move. And he just does the speech. And that kind of reminds me of what Nicholson did, sitting in the chair, just talking. And, you know, you can't take your eyes off of him. And that's great acting. You don't have to do all of the, you were talking about the red face and the this and the that. You know, you can, and I think in this case for Tom Cruise, it was very appropriate. But you don't have to do that. You can just say the words, and everybody's going to watch, and they're going to listen. And it's very cool.
Yeah, I'm very curious where they're going to go with this, because next year they're going to do a live TV presentation of this, and I believe Alec Baldwin is playing the Jessup role. So I'm curious how much he will be channeling Jack Nicholson at this point.
Good to know on that one. Jay Betzel, I'll let you weigh in quickly on this before we move on to one more subject.
I'm just going to just play devil's advocate because Jack Nicholson is awesome. I'm just going to say Tom Cruise for the purpose of arguments. And, you know, you look at The Color of Money, he deferred to Paul Newman. You look at Rain Man, he deferred to Dustin Hoffman. You look at Days of Thunder, even, he deferred to Robert Duvall. But in this one, he just goes toe-to-toe. And, you know, there's a part where Kevin Pollak says, you should have seen yourself thundering away at Kendrick. It's almost like he's really thundering away at Jack Nicholson. And this is Tom Cruise v. Nicholson. It's like a heavyweight fight. Or, like, I'm a sports fan. Obviously, it's like Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan going each other in their prime. And it was just really amazing to see. So probably the winner of that scene is really Aaron Sorkin, because he's the one that gave it to us.
Kobe and Michael's not Larry and Magic going all the way back to the 80s and the basketball with the Celtics and the Lakers. I'm going to go back. The one thing that I would interject here is that in watching, we always love the extra features and bonus features on DVDs. To hear Rob Reiner tell the story that Nicholson was going full out in full voice in every take, even when he was not on camera, when they were using it for the other actors' cutaways, he would go all out in that role. And Nicholson's response to Rob Reiner, and I'm going to butcher the impression, but I'll do it anyway. Robbie, it's acting. I love acting, Robbie. And so and he literally, apparently in full voice, went all out as Jessup over and over and over and over again over the course of 2 or 3 days in that scene, even when the camera was not on him. So
just that was more of a going something. South Jack Nicholson than a Few Good Men Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, not good with a southern draw, probably. I need to work on that at this late hour. All right, one more for each of you. Again, I will begin with our lady amongst us. Joanna, I wonder here that this movie did not win the Academy Award for Best Picture. Unforgiven did. For all the compliments of Jack Nicholson, he didn't win Best Supporting Actor. Gene Hackman did for his role as the sheriff in Unforgiven. That's a lot of people would lose a bet probably that this movie didn't win Best Picture and Nicholson didn't win Best Supporting Actor at the Academy Awards at the Oscars. What about that? Do you agree? Did you agree at the time? Do you agree now?
I do agree. I think Unforgiven is an amazing piece of work. And I just have a thing about Gene Hackman. I know he's amazing, amazing, amazing. And again, you know, you talk about these actors who go nuts and they're emoting all over. He never does that. He just embodies the role. He's so incredible, Hackman, and I miss him. And I wish we could just drag him out of, where is he, Santa Fe, and tell him to stop painting, and we just want to see him. But I also think, you know, surprise, surprise, there's politics in these things. And I think that people were so shocked to see what had happened to Clint Eastwood and his whole sort of evolution at the time, because this was a man who had started out making his mark, really, in Westerns and movies about violence. And to make a movie that was a Western that was didn't want violence, it was anti-violence, was such a surprise to people. He did it so well, and Gene Hackman was so good. And aren't we lucky that we had such great competition 25 years ago, and I hope this year too, it'll be the same thing, that we have these actors and writers and directors doing incredible work for us to be able to enjoy, not just the year that we see them, but going forward.
All right, Mike, I'll go to you. Are you okay with the fact that this movie did not win Best Picture, that Nicholson didn't win, that Tom Cruise didn't win, Demi Moore didn't win?
I wasn't shocked, no. I mean, I don't place a lot of stock in the Oscars, especially after Dances with Wolves won for Best Picture. So after that, it was kind of game over for me. So
quick and to the point. John Cross, what about you? You fine with it 25 years later?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Both films are completely classics in their own right. But also, I'm not a big fan, like my fellow country person, Judy Dench, won for like being in Shakespeare in Love for like 10 seconds or whatever it was. So I'm not a big fan of sort of giving like a stunt casting or stunt cameo shot an Oscar. Like, I don't really, I would more sort of look at someone like a Kevin Bacon from this movie, or Demi Moore or someone as a supporting actor, rather than necessarily Nicholson in the role. But Hackman is phenomenal. I echo everything said about Hackman. I recently got to see Scarecrow, which I didn't even know existed, and I got to see it on the big screen in New York, and was just every performance he does blown away. So, I mean, Hackman definitely deserved it. Nicholson has won for other stuff, right, since then or before then?
That's correct,
yes. I believe he won for Terms of Endearment, at least.
Right, yeah, so he also already had one, so there we go.
Right.
Good on that. Jay Betzel, you find 25 years later, you over it, that this movie didn't win an Oscar in the big ones?
I'm kind of going to go, like, the nostalgia route. Like, I know, like, you know, a couple of years after this in 94, when there was Shawshank and Pulp Fiction and Forrest Gump won, there was a lot of people that had their feelings there. And this one here, I remember going back in the day that a lot of the talk was Unforgiven was going to win because it was Clint Eastwood's time, kind of similar to Scorsese's time with The Departed, where Jack Nicholson was in and acted completely crazy. But in this particular case, like I said, I'm going to kind of go with the nostalgia and feel like I think A Few Good Men should have won, because I like Unforgiven, but I love A Few Good Men. And Gene Hackman, I know, had won an Oscar for, I believe it was The French Connection. And we know Gene Hackman was great in one of our favorite movies, Hoosiers. So yes, it's not like you can really lose here. You know, it's not like, I agree with you on Dances with Wolves. It's not like Goodfellas not winning, you know. So there's one of those things where I don't look at this with like a lot of animosity. But if they had asked me and I had a vote, I would have voted for Jack and Tom and for A Few Good Men.
Love it. All right. So here's what we're going to do to close things out from each one of our hosts here. One more time, tell us about your podcast, about your website. And then if I left out anything and you want to add something else about A Few Good Men, any comment for 20 or 30 seconds, we'll do that. Joanna, we'll start with you. Again, plug away and then give us a final thought on A Few Good Men. Go.
Thank you. Okay, I'm Joanna Langfield, and I hope you'll come and find me. I'm online at themovieminute.com. My podcast is The Movie Minute, and you can, of course, subscribe, or you can find it on my, you know, it's all over the place, and it's on the website, too. I do a lot of reviews of the movies that are coming up to your theaters right now. So, you know, I hope that we'll be able to talk online, on podcast, whatever. But I appreciate being here with you tonight, because being able to look back and to see these really great films that we can cherish and we can push people to see if they haven't seen already, or to watch again, to appreciate the finer points of these things. I think, as we were saying before, everybody kind of remembers that last scene, but there's so much else in it leading up to that and even after that really is stuff that we should be proud of as just people who love movies. And I hope that people will be able to celebrate this anniversary by taking a look.
John Cross, go ahead, plug away, and a final thought on A Few Good Men.
Yes, hello, I'm John Cross, the Englishman in New York, and I have a website. It's aftermoviediner.com, and the podcast is the After Movie Diner podcast. I also do another show called Doctor Action and the Kick-Ass Kid, which is far more kind of sporadic. I don't do that all the time. But that is as if MST3K did met Cheech and Chong, I guess, not, although we don't smoke pot, doing reviews of 80s and 90s, or doing commentaries over 80s and 90s action movies. So it's kind of like that. Derek and Clive, if anyone's heard the British comedians, Derek and Clive, Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, it's kind of like that. But anyway, check out aftermoviediner.com. And my last thing about A Few Good Men is really one of the reasons, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. That's the first thing. And one of the reasons to watch this film, as a lot of people have mentioned on the show, but it's to go back to a time when films were actually written and there were actually scripts and someone had actually thought about the dialogue and the plot and the characters and da-da-da-da-da. And, yeah, there's a whole ton of things in A Few Good Men that were cliche even at the time that it was made, but they are warm and wonderful and welcome sort of Americana cliches, and I dig that. And I kind of hate going to the movies these days and not getting the same kind of thrill of that really strong, delicious dialogue and a plot we can all get involved in and characters that represent different thoughts and opinions of ourselves. And I kind of miss that in movies. So go check this out.
Love it. Mike White, who has joined us from China. One more time, plug your show, your podcast, your website, and a final thought on A Few Good Men.
All right, yeah, I'm Mike White, and I'm the host of the Projection Booth Podcast, which is over at projection-booth.com. You can just Google Projection Booth Podcast, and hopefully, if I've done my proper SEO, you'll be able to find me okay over on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio and all that fun stuff. So I just want to thank you guys for having me as part of this conversation. It is great. I don't normally talk about movies that are, even though this is 25 years old, this recent. I tend to go back a little bit further. And I would say to that end that if you guys want a great double feature with A Few Good Men, definitely check out The Caine Mutiny with Humphrey Bogart. If you guys have seen that movie, you really need to, and I think that these two movies would go really well together.
Yeah, you're right.
Good great call. Double feature on that, like that. Jay Betzel, plug away for We've Seen That.
Okay, you can hear TJ and I on We've Seen That. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, We've Seen That. You can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio. And my last thing I want to say about A Few Good Men is this is just such a special movie. And every time I watch it, I've probably seen it all the way through 30 times and bits and pieces about 100 times. It's just like visiting old friends, and it's so great. And I'm really glad that it never got remade or there was a sequel with Tom Cruise working at a law firm somewhere. And I know that there's the talk of the Alec Baldwin TV show coming soon. But this is one of those where if it's not broken, don't fix it. And I'm glad that they left well enough alone.
I love it on all of those points. Again, Jay and I kind of go back and forth about these movies off the air and off the show. In fact, he and I were talking in advance of this show that when Tom Cruise writes on the legal pad, when they're trying to find out where they're going with the testimony of Loudon Downey, and Loudon Downey wasn't in the room when the order was allegedly given, and we see the cursive, beautiful, teacher-esque handwriting on the legal pad, I say to Jay Betzel, there's no way that Tom Cruise's handwriting is that neat. That's a school teacher's handwriting. That's somebody else's handwriting in the movie. That's how technical we sometimes get on our show. But
and I had Tom Cruise's back. I said, I think he can write cursive. I think he did.
You think he can write that neat, that legibly on the legal pad? And, of course, Demi Moore famously writes the question. And then we get the bombshell that Downey wasn't in the room for the order to be given in A Few Good Men. It's a great movie, and I've enjoyed greatly getting to talk about it here over the course of really about the last hour with Joanna Langfield, John Cross, Mike White, and Jay Betzel. All of you did fantastic. Thank you for your time. Good luck for the shows. We may be able to reprise this again and do it with another movie down the road, but thank you for giving us the time here, all of us collectively, to share and chat on the 25th anniversary of A Few Good Men. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, so there was our roundtable, and again, our thanks to Joanna Langfield, to Mike White, and to John Cross joining Jay Betzel in the roundtable. How did I do? All right, give me the critics' review. How did I do as the moderator? Did I do a sufficient enough job? How did I do?
Taking the Jack Nicholson impersonation out, I thought you did a good job. I mean, because
you docked me for that. Yeah,
that was four people that definitely had a lot to say, and you kind of kept it reined in. And obviously, we could have had this thing go for 2 hours because it's pretty cool to hear everyone and their thoughts on this 25-year-old gem.
No doubt. All right, so as we wind things down on We've Seen That with TJ and Jay off the round table, do you have some more fun facts to throw out on the 25th anniversary of a
yeah,
classic?
Yeah, I did so much men? Research for it because, you know, when we were talking about doing it, we didn't know if the round table was going to come about or not. So I have, like, all these notes. So I'll just share a little bit of it. Here's one that's kind of fun, that Jason Alexander was set to play Weinberg, which was Kevin Pollak's part.
Wow.
But whenever Seinfeld got renewed by NBC for its second season, that's how long ago this was, he was not available, so Rob Reiner gave Kevin Pollak the part after he read with Tom Cruise. So
how about that?
And you know, we talked how much different that'd be.
It could be, yeah. If it's not George from Seinfeld that's in there. And did you like my little anecdote during the roundtable about Kevin Pollak, known more as the comedian in the late 80s and the early 90s than being the film star? If I didn't adequately explain it there again, he made the comedic rounds a bunch. And really this now he delved obviously into some acting with The Usual Suspects and that kind of stuff, but much more known up until that time as a comedian. So it's interesting that Jason Alexander would end up in a comedy role staying with Seinfeld that makes him all time famous and all time rich. And that opens the door for Kevin Pollak, in this case, to be Lieutenant Weinberg.
Yeah. And think about that too. Jason Alexander we knew was the guy that played Philip Stuckey in Pretty Woman, who was horrible. Mm-hmm. He was, he had about the same morals as Colonel Nathan Jessup in Few Good Men. So it's definitely, it's crazy how the way things turn out, and a lot of times when people talk about actors not being able to do a movie because of the TV show, the one that always comes up is Tom Selleck on Magnum not being able to do Raiders of the Lost Ark, when ironically he would have been able to because of a writer's strike. But, so there's a lot of times where you'd look back at it like, how would things be different had we had Tom Selleck as Indiana Jones and not had Magnum for eight years of the 80s? So, there's a lot of stuff like that. And that's one here. How different would it be if we didn't have Seinfeld for a decade, But moving on to some more Few Good Men stuff, here's something kind of cool. I kind of gushed over Aaron Sorkin during our roundtable, the writer of Few Good Men. And obviously he wrote this as a play, and he wrote the play on bar napkins while he was bartending.
Yes, he did.
How cool is that? His older sister was had joined the Navy JAG Corps whenever she graduated from law school. And she had called him one morning and was talking about this case involving a hazing down in the U.S. military base in Guantanamo Bay. And that's kind of what gave him the idea to do it. And then he was working as a bartender at Broadway's Palace Theater, and patrons were taking in the first act of La Cage aux Folles, and he started writing down these ideas on cocktail napkins. And that night, he went home and he'd have all these napkins, he'd throw them out, and he and his roommate shared this Mac 512K, and he would go type it out every night when he got home and kept doing it until he finished it. How cool is that?
Amazing. Amazing how some of these things get done. All right, so you and I quote lines to movies all the time, but what's interesting is my wife and I parse out lines from this movie because she's seen it a bunch as well, and as I mentioned, we were dating when we saw it in the theater 25 years ago. We've now been married almost 25 years. Scary. When we're talking about Lieutenant Weinberg, where the introductions happen and he actually says, "I have no responsibilities here whatsoever," she and I will quote that even to this day when something's going on, like, "What are you doing?" "I have no responsibilities here whatsoever." Just to, stick it in from A Few Good Men if you can. Or we might break off a little Colonel Nathan Jessup with "I have a greater responsibility than you can fathom." See, I didn't do the impression that time. So when one of us says, "What are you doing? Why are you doing this? I have a greater responsibility than you can fathom," that will come up here and there. And I got another fun one. I was watching a replay one night just to show you how these movies and these gripping scenes stick with us. I mean, that final courtroom showdown with Kathy and Jessup, would it be fair to say, Jay, would you agree, that's one of the most memorable scenes that you could pull anybody from the age of about 35 to 55 and say, give me a scene from a movie that you've watched over and over again and can quote, and almost every one of those people in their top two or three would have to have that clinching scene from A Few Good Men. Would you agree with that?
If they don't, that means they're like a fan of horror movies or comedies or something. But I mean, for sure. And it's funny you mentioned that, bringing up that scene. That was, I've got all these notes. Like I said, one of the things I found was, the American Film Institute, they gave that movie's the "You Can't Handle the Truth" from A Few Good Men was voted the number 29 movie quote of all time.
Ever.
They did their top 100, and it is number 29 of all time.
Yeah, "You Can't Handle the Truth" is a good one on that. But here's the best, is one night I'm watching the movie, Mrs. Reeves is two rooms away taking a bath, and I guess I had it up loud enough to where she's hearing the dialogue, but I don't know that she's hearing it. And I'm not making any comments, I'm just watching the movie. And the whole scene plays out, and Kathy says to the judge, "I move that we go immediately to a section," whatever the section is, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, "hearing the witness has rights." And there's the dramatic pause there. And then in the movie, Cruz looks at Kevin Bacon at Ross and says, "Jack." But before he could say it, my wife from two rooms away, Jay Betzel, says out loud, Jack, because she's been listening to the big dramatic courtroom scene at the end there. Again, the lines from this, and in particular that final scene, that's the kind of stuff that sticks with you. And it has stuck with me for a long, long time.
As it should, because that movie is awesome. And it's one of those things where I find myself, I quote it a lot without even realizing, because I rewatched this the other day before we did our roundtable. And there's the, you know, the part where, like, Tom Cruise will say, I'm pacing myself when he's in the office with Demi Moore, you know, and I say that all the time when I'm actually at work. You know, my boss will say something, you know, in kind of condescending tone, and I'll say, I'm pacing myself.
How about you mean 0600 in the morning? That's another good one,
exactly,
too, when he has
right?
to wake up early to go to Guantanamo Bay. Exactly.
In the morning. Exactly.
All right. There's give me another fun fact.
Stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Aaron Sorkin, you know, like I said, who was one of the basically, this movie gave us Aaron Sorkin and all these other things he's given us. Like, you and I have talked about the West Wing over the years and so many other things. And there's a couple things here. First off, Aaron Sorkin made a cameo in this movie. He's in the bar
yes.
that Tom Cruise is sitting in, and he overhears him talking about how he's going to, you know, be up to his ears in paperwork and this and that. And it's kind of where Tom Cruise kind of starts thinking, is this what I see myself there in 20 years, right? And then the other thing I was going to mention about Aaron Sorkin was The West Wing, which you and I have discussed over the years, as I caught up with it on Netflix, and you had watched it when it first came on back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that movie was – that TV show was kind of well-known for walking and talking, because all of them walk throughout
yes.
the White House while they're doing it.
Yes.
And that was kind of began in this movie when they follow the three of them walking through the courtroom and talking, and they basically just follow them into the courthouse.
Or walking,
where they got one of the ideas.
Walking in the hallways with Jack Ross and negotiating with him, or
exactly.
or when Cruise and Kevin Pollak are walking around with the daughter and trying to contemplate whether or not to follow through with the case.
It just kind of became a Sorkin staple, because everybody, you know, there's multiple things going on. Everybody's not sitting around talking; they're always doing something and talking.
Well, and if you go back a few years ago to The Social Network, the movie about the creation of Facebook and how that worked, and on to his HBO series The Newsroom, and any other Sorkin movies that he's written, the Steve Jobs movie as well that's recently come out.
The American President, Sports Night, all those.
But, I mean, if you go to those that are the recent ones, you again see dialogue, fast-paced, walking, talking. That is his trademark. For sure, from the movies. All right, any other fun facts about A Few Good Men before we have to get out of here?
Yeah, let's see what else I've got. This is a personal one. This is kind of funny. I live in Fort Worth, as everyone who listens to our show probably knows by now. And we have this theater called Casa Manana. And it's kind of like a domed theater. It's got the stage out there, and, you know, they put on plays and stuff. And back, it's probably, I'm going to say, about 10 years ago. We'll say it's 2007, 2008, when they had a run of A Few Good Men. And so, of course, me and a couple of my friends had to go see it. And I can't remember who played Caffey. I want to say it was someone, his name was like Jensen Ackles or something like that. But Colonel Jessup was played by Lou Diamond Phillips. So I just wanted to throw that out there,
that
I saw this play and Lou Diamond Phillips played Jessup. And he did really good. You know, it was funny. I kept looking at him thinking, this is Chavez from Young Guns. But
he
did a good job.
He's also in another great military movie shortly after this, Courage Under Fire, Denzel Washington, Meg Ryan, and he's Johnny Night Train Monfreeze. He's one of the members of the Army.
He was Bad News,
and he ended up being Bad News at the end of that movie. That may be we've seen that down the road. So he does have a military kind of villain-type background prior to doing that role. I would have loved to have seen him as Jessup, and I'm interested in the upcoming show that's going to be the live broadcast, when it's going to happen, to see what those actors live up to in terms of playing Caffey and Jessup and Galloway and the primary characters this show.
And I'm kind of curious to see if it even does happen, because I was looking too, and it says apparently Aaron Sorkin wants to push it back to 2019 now, just because of the logistics of everything of doing a live show on TV. So, you know, it may happen, it may not. I'll definitely watch it if it does, but kind of like I said on the roundtable, this is one of those where I'm really glad. I certainly would have watched it had they done a sequel, but I'm really kind of glad looking back on it that they didn't mess it up. Because now when we watch this, it's kind of like visiting old friends.
No doubt.
And here's another fun fact was Lance Corporal Harold Dawson.
Yep.
He was played by Wolfgang Bodison. Have you heard
mm-hmm.
this story, how he got the gig?
I think I know where you're going.
He started working in the mailroom at Rob Reiner's production company, Castle Rock, and then he became a production assistant. Before they were making Misery, he was Reiner's personal assistant. And while Reiner was scouting locations for A Few Good Men, he thought that Wolfgang Bodison actually looked like a Marine. and then gave him a chance to act in this film. He gave him a screen test and ended up hiring him. And now Wolfgang Boston's gone on to be in a bunch of other movies.
How about that? And I know he's big enough. He was also being used as security at times when they would go places into locations. And then finally he got an opportunity, I guess, to read for the part of Dawson. And there you go. I don't think I gave you an adequate chance to answer. Is that Tom Cruise's handwriting? I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. When he writes on the legal pad, where is this going? Question mark.
I'm not saying it is or isn't, but I'm saying it very easily could be. I don't think it was necessary that they brought a woman
skeptic,
in.
The skeptic in me says that someone else's hand besides his hand, and then Demi Moore, of course, supposedly writes the question mark, Galloway next to it. Where is this going? So, cool. Yeah, just fun trivia on a few good men, for sure.
Well, let's wrap up with this. I know when we first started the show, probably about an hour and a half ago, I was talking about some of the numbers. But I mentioned the Few Good Men box office, that it made $141 million domestically. So it was number five for the year 1992. Do you think you can pick any of the four that finished ahead of it?
Well, I know we discussed in the movie that Unforgiven won the Best Picture, the Oscar. So that's got to be in the top five.
It was number 11.
Really? And I know we've gone over this list on previous. We've seen that because we did a couple of other movies. But I can't.
Top five.
I'm trying to fathom who was better than those two movies. Then that was not The Fugitive.
Yeah, the cartoon and the three sequels that are ahead of it.
All right, so The Fugitive was the next year, though, right? We've been over that.
It was 93.
Right. All right, so the Disney cartoon was
Aladdin. It was number one.
Wow.
217 million.
Wow.
And then the two, three, and four are all sequels. You can guess any of them?
Sequels in two, three, and four spots.
Just ahead of A Few Good Men.
I don't know. You got to hit me with them.
Number two, Home Alone 2.
Okay.
Number three, Batman Returns. Number four, Lethal Weapon 3. And Few Good Men finished just ahead of, we'll round out the top 10. Sister Act, The Bodyguard, Wayne's World. We've seen that classic, Basic Instinct. And number 10 was A League of Their Own.
How about that? So, again, different reasons for different movies, but this one is sustained. I would love to know, and we don't have the answer here, how many times has this movie been replayed on over-the-air cable television? It's got to be in the thousands. It might be 5,000 at this point. It might even be 7,500 times this movie has been shown, especially on a weekend night, a Friday night or a Saturday night on over-the-air regular cable. It's on all the time.
Yeah, one of our pasts, we've seen that. We did The Shawshank Redemption. We talked about how it was on TNT basically once a month for the last 15, 20 years. And, you know, and in case people listening, in case you have not heard our previous episodes, we have our catalog up on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. So if you like what we're doing, please feel free to go back and listen. And if you're on iTunes, leave us a review and a rating. That helps us out. It helps more people get to discover our show. So we certainly appreciate that. And I agree. I'm sure there's a way to find out how many times it's been on TNT, but I don't know if that. I think it might be above my pay grade.
I'm talking about it's been on WGN America, which only seems to show movies now, especially at night. VH1, CMT, AMC. I mean, just pick a pay cable channel. An over-the-air regular cable channel, and it seems like they're showing this movie at some point, and you and I are watching.
You know, and I think we mentioned that in the roundtable. That it's one of those movies where it plays okay on AMC and TNT. It's not one of these like Basic Instinct. If you try to watch it on TNT, it's a different movie. But if you watch A Few Good Men on TNT or NBC or anything like that, you know, it's essentially the same movie. There may be a couple of the four-letter words that need to get changed, but, I mean, it's still just as intense. And it's still a really good viewing.
All right, let's remind the audience again about where they can find us on social media. Jay Betzel, go.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TheFamousJay, and you can find our show on Facebook and Twitter at We've Seen That.
Yes, and if you want to find me as well, I do radio work for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so I'm at Buck Sideline Guy, B-U-C, Buck Sideline Guy. And we also want to say thank you again to Joanna Langfield, Mike White, and John Cross, who participated in our roundtable, and go find their shows and their different podcasts through Blog Talk Radio. And the plugs that they gave there. That was a lot of fun, Jay. We may do that again on a special occasion down the road with another roundtable.
No doubt. You'd mentioned The Fugitive earlier. That might be a fun one to get a group of people together and talk about. There's so many good movies coming up over the next year. We've got our list going, the movies we're going to do. And I really can't wait for people to experience these with us.
Well, what's the next thing that you think you want to do, partner? What do you want to do on We've Seen
Well,
That?
Well, as we speak, we are on the cusp of the release of The Last Jedi.
Oh,
so I have a feeling we'll probably talk a little Force Awakens to kind of just get ready for this.
A little Star Wars is in our future? Could be.
That's my vibe. It's up to you. That's what I'm thinking.
I'm getting that feeling. And I wonder what the audience thinks if they want us to hit us up on We've Seen That on Facebook, on Twitter. Find him at The Famous J. Let us know, because I think that you might be right. The force is strong in this one, Jay Betzel, with coming up with that. That might be good. And then we got to hit a couple of Christmas time movies before we're done with this month of December. Listen, I had a blast being with you and with our roundtable guests for this special 25th anniversary show that we did for A Few Good Men. Did you have fun?
I loved it. Good times. And thanks to everybody again that joined us.
We certainly appreciate you joining us as well. Again, it's We've Seen That. Spread the word. Subscribe on iTunes. Subscribe on Stitcher. However you found this show, thanks again to our friends at Blog Talk Radio, which helped facilitate the roundtable that we did. For Jay Betzel, I'm TJ Reeves. Thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you again soon. Hope you enjoyed A Few Good Men.